It's Wednesday morning, and about this time each Wednesday, we check in with Bill Hall, the real estate guy from Premier Homes and Properties, which sponsors this portion of the program. Good morning, Bill Hall.
Good morning, Carl, and good morning, Alec. Good
morning, sir.
What a beautiful morning we're having, huh?
Nice and
drizzly,
yes,
out there.
Every day above ground is a good day. So,
well, we'll see. I mean, the future has a lot of good promises too. So don't let's not sell that short.
Definitely not.
But yeah, today's
I had a question for you here.
Yes, sir.
You hand out, as you do at the end of each year, these wonderful little magnetic refrigerator calendars, a month at a time, and we have one up on our fridge here, and I have one also in front of me here at the office area.
Mm-hmm.
And today being the 1st of February, I took off the January listing, of course, because January is past. Mm-hmm. On the back of each of your months on this refrigerator calendar that you give away, mm-hmm. there's a recipe, okay, and generally seems to relate to the season, something like this. This one was called Spiced Hot Chocolate. Did you check this one out, Bill?
I haven't made it yet. It's one of the key ingredients that makes it a little different is the cayenne pepper. And just a little infusion of cayenne pepper, and of course salt has always been used when dealing with sweet things to give it a different perspective or add a different layer in of taste. But I thought the cayenne pepper was kind of unusual. I like cayenne pepper. I don't really use it as much as I do other spices, but I mean it's interesting to put that in hot chocolate. I mean, it'd be spicy hot chocolate for sure.
No doubt about it. They do offer the option down there at the bottom. It says you can replace the cayenne pepper and cinnamon with a quarter to a half teaspoon of peppermint extract.
So you could have
still spice it up that way, but not maybe sort of a hot spicy type thing.
You know, whole
milk, heavy whipping cream, semi-sweet chocolate chips, cinnamon or cayenne pepper, or the peppermint thing, and a pinch of salt.
Sure.
Sounds absolutely delicious. So thanks for this recipe.
Well,
we're going to pull these together and see if we might be able to make one of these things.
You're welcome. You know, anytime you add heavy whipping cream to anything that requires that, it's always going to be richer and more flavorful. It's just a beautiful product to add to make
that's right. That's the way Alec drinks his coffee, too, when he has the option, right?
Yeah, that's the only way I drink coffee,
just
the heavy whipping cream.
Wow.
And after you get off the whole...
About a million calories of each
cream. Yeah, but I mean,
sure.
I think a tablespoon is probably like 50 calories.
Oh, yeah.
But I go bloop, 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 bloop. So that's about 250.
He's drinking heavy whipping cream and he flavors it with coffee.
Yeah.
That's basically it. That is. AM 910 WJCW, Thinking Out Loud right now with Bill Hall, Premier Homes and Properties. And tell you what you got for us this morning here?
Well, you know, Carl, I really appreciate you sending me that article this week on the... On how other communities or parts of the country are dealing with multi-generational living. And we talk about that on the radio a lot, but I think that it needs to be talked about a little bit more because I don't see it as much in East Tennessee as I hear about it happening in major other parts of the country in a much larger way. But I think that the thought process of multi-generational living makes all the sense in the world. I mean, the infrastructure is there. Kids going to school. Kids are sick and not able to go to school because they have a bug or something like that. Multi-generational families seem like they deal with that more fluidly than if they live separately. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that, and especially now with inflation, you know, being so high and the housing market being so limited, I think it's a great idea. I wish people would really explore that option more. Now, they have to change the dynamics of what they're looking for, but it gives them more ability to buy bigger for, you know, the additional family members. And I think multi-generational living is definitely a real good aspect. I mean, Europe has been doing it for thousands of years.
And, of course.
And they still continue to do it. And here in the United States, we don't do it as much. But I think because of the way the economy has taken the turn that it has been makes more sense every single day that I hear about that. So I want to thank you very much for giving me that. And hopefully listeners will inspire one of our listeners out there in the world to take up multi-generational living, because I think it makes all the sense in the world, especially as the elderly get older and the younger get older. And so it's really good to have that type of level of infrastructure in a household.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes a smarter child too if you have children that are involved in a multi-generational life.
Oh, yeah, I think there are many, many positives that can come out of it as well. It occurs to me, I'm just tossing out, thinking out loud to you as the the primary owner of Premier Homes and Properties. Is there, in the real estate industry right now, is there sort of a, I don't know what to call it, kind of a resource available for the burgeoning multi-generational push that's going to be taking place across the country? Do you have hands-on information and ways to be able to help present the concept to folks who might not otherwise be thinking about it?
You know, I really haven't given it thought like that, Carl, so I really don't have an answer for
okay.
you on that one, in all due respect. But I think that multi-generational living in the United States starts with the desire and the need for that because of economic mm-hmm. conditions. In Europe, it's just the way they live. You know, it's just a whole
right.
different thought process. So multi-generational lifestyle in the United States is relatively new, with the exception of a few percentages of people out there, but makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you know, that's what we're trying to do is we're all trying to figure everything out, and some of us are going in a million different directions, but a household that has more than one family member living in it brings a lot more to the table than one by itself, hopefully,
mm-hmm. right.
in the best case scenario. But you know, the market continues to be a challenge, and you know, we talked about possibly prices. This is the biggest thing I get is our price is going to go down. I'll just wait till prices go down. I'm going to wait. I think prices are going to go down.
Mm.
You know, and I'm going to wait in case there's a recession, which there already is, and prices are going to go down. I hear that 1,000 times a week, and here's the deal with that. You know, prices have dipped down. They've stopped accelerating, and they have dipped down in our area anywhere from 1.5% to 5%, depending on the house and depending on the location and the price point. So mm-hmm. we've already seen that. Do we expect to see any more of that? I say no. I say I say that, you know, because the demand is still up there and the supply is still so limited that it's going to keep the value of homes up. And I don't ever see them rolling back to where they were pre-pandemic, just so you know. And it's a major talking point for me and when I talk to people, because they're always asking me that question constantly. And
sure.
I appreciate their thought process because I think about it a lot myself. Am I really saying the right things? Does my research really indicate that the prices are dropping? And they're not. Now, in some areas, they are. But in our area, they're not. Florida was a typical one that the media picked up the prices dropped in there, but it actually picked up 5.8% last year. So, I mean, it's just
wow.
Yeah. So it's, you know, fact check it for sure. Fact check everything if you want to know it for sure. I mean, look at the Santos thing. Anyway, but so I think that we're going to see that the inventory stays about the same, where we're going to have a house come on the market. We're going to have still a lot of interest in it, not as much as before, because we have seen a major pullback in buyers and mortgage applications are way down compared to a year ago. So we are seeing a pullback. The Feds are going to probably come in with a quarter more on the percent deal.
Mm-hmm,
how that's going
right.
to impact the overall totality of the housing market? Probably not much,
mm-hmm.
but it could take the interest rates up to 7.25% to 7.5%. In some cases, eventually. But I honestly don't think the prices are going to drop back down. I mean, I can't overemphasize that with people.
Yeah, prices probably are not going to be coming down too much at all now. However, you do foresee, I'm sure, that eventually the interest rates at the place where we're at now, that's going to be coming down to somewhat more familiar levels, 4, 5, maybe 5.5% over the course of time, right?
Over the course of the next year and a half, I think that we'll see a 5.5 to 6% interest rate on home
okay.
mortgages. That's where it's going to settle. Because what happens is, Carl, that no matter what the Fed does, they keep raising the Fed rate up by a quarter, and they're going to start to slow that down. I think we're seeing the end of that for
mm-hmm.
right now. But no matter what, if the people don't go out and apply with banks and mortgage companies for loans, then these banks and mortgage companies have tons of their own money that they have to lend out, that they don't have to go to the Fed and borrow, you know, at the higher rates, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to definitely affect the interest rates when they all pan out. As people
okay.
don't get mortgages, as they stop getting mortgages, then the money's going to be more available, and how they make it more available is by lowering the cost of it to people.
Okay.
And makes homes more affordable, too. So it's a big plus on home mortgages being more affordable. And I think that's really where we've suffered the most in terms of buyers out there, affordability. I mean,
mm-hmm.
mortgage payments have doubled in the last year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it wasn't because the price of houses doubled. It was because interest rates doubled.
That's right, because they went to almost historic lows a year ago. So
it was too low for too long, for sure. So I think that 2023 and 2024 are going to be a lot like we're seeing right now. Mortgage rates will probably settle around 5.5% to 6%. And demand will continue to be about what it is right now, which is not near the level that it was. And we're going to just, you know, as houses come on the market, they're going to get sold pretty quickly at a really good price. And so people should, you know, if they're thinking about putting their house on the market, I would definitely do it now. I mean, because definitely do it now. Because we know what it's like now.
It sounds like some extra long-term planning may be also in the offing, considering the status of where we are with the mortgage rates and everything as well, too. So Bill Hall, the real estate guy from Premier Homes and Properties, laying it out for us here on Tri-Cities Talk Radio for buyers and sellers in Northeast Tennessee. Does it every Wednesday around 8:15. Bill, tell us about how to get in touch with you.
It's easy. My office number is 530-7077, and my main number is 423-946-7575. And whether you're in this area or you're in Rochester, from Rochester, whatever you are, you can call me at the 423-946-7575. And there's still a lot of people looking to this area to move here. They're just not doing it as quickly as they were a year ago.
Well, you can light a fire under them. Bill Hall from Premier Homes and Properties. Always great to talk out, think out loud with you and talk to you on real estate. We'll talk to you next week.
I can't hardly wait.